The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
And now, the list of things that you can buy at the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com. Things to wear like Chicago Reader hats, t-shirts, bandanas, and face masks. Things for your daily life like the Chicago Reader camping mug, Chicago Reader tote bags, and a Chicago Reader reporter's notebook. Things for you to read like our Reader recipes, the Chicago Reader 420 Companion, our Chicago Reader Best Of book series from journalists Maya Duke-Masaba, Mike Sula, Ben Jarofsky, and Lior Galil, the Chicago Reader coloring book, and the Chicago Reader Stay Home puzzle. Find the Chicago Reader store at chicagoreader.com and show your support for the nation's first free weekly newspaper since 1971.
Well, it's time to Ben Jarofsky Show. As I speak, it's Friday, December 24th, the day before Christmas. But when you hear this, it will be the day after Christmas. Whoa! That's the Twilight Zone theme. The headline in the Chicago Tribune: I can't even say home delivered because I'm still in this Airbnb in LA. And if things keep up, I may be here for like the next few days because COVID's canceling a lot of flights in America. But the headline in the Tribune says it all. Latest U.S. surge demand for tests. Man, this COVID thing is no freaking joke. And I promised folks yesterday that I would deliver the following guest. I'm very proud to say I'm making good on my promise. So, distinguished guest, introduce yourself.
This is Eric Zorn. I write the Picayune Sentinel, a weekly newsletter, and I also contribute occasionally to the Daily Herald newspaper.
Yes.
My new gig.
The legendary Eric Zorn. We talk about him on the show all the time. He weighs in with corrections on how I'm butchering the pronunciations of various names. And we take great delight in that. Because, Eric, you know, I've been struggling with pronunciations my whole life. I got a little dyslexia, a lot, so I reverse. And it's always funny when you send those corrections in, because then it just makes me struggle even more. I'm like, oh, Christ, what did Eric say?
Is it Rabine or Rabine? I hear you. I hear you fighting with this all the time. I want to text you.
Oh, it's hilarious. Gary. Let's give 10 points to Eric Zorn. He's probably the only person in the city of Chicago other than me who knows who Gary Rabine or Rabine or whatever it is.
It's Rabine. It's Rabine. And you're right. I probably am one of the few people who know who the guy is, but his name may possibly come up a little bit next year. I don't have a lot of confidence that it will, but he's running for governor as a Republican. He's one of the four announced candidates for governor. Which is why you know your show, probably more than most, probably more than any other media outlet in town, is following this Republican jockeying for supremacy and the race for governor, the race to get annihilated by Pritzker next fall.
Yeah, well, I'm going to do something with you at the end of the show that I did. We had some fun with Delmarie Cobb when she was on the other day, and I'm going to say, I didn't tell you I was going to do this. We're going to get out Eric's crystal ball. He's going to make some predictions because it's also sort of an end of the year show. But of course, Eric Zorn, a legendary Chicago Tribune columnist for many years, and then he just said, to hell with it, I'm walking away. Like Barry Sanders in Detroit, just walked away. I give him a lot of credit for that. Still cranking them out, Eric. Still cranking out columns. And the reason I immediately turned to Eric, as I said yesterday, so folks didn't hear yesterday's show, I got his column. He sent me his column. And there was a line in the column, Eric. It was one of those, damn, I wish I wrote that. On the other hand, I don't wish I have COVID. So Eric announced in his column that he has COVID. his whole family. I think your wife has COVID, and two of your three children have COVID, if I recall correctly from the column. And then you wrote a line, which I quoted yesterday, which I'm going to butcher now, but everyone will get COVID was the line. And it's like, I got to have Eric on. We have to talk about this. We just have to talk about the fact that people like me and you, Eric, and so many other folks that I know have spent the entire last almost 2 years doing everything we can to avoid getting COVID. And now suddenly it's like this existential crisis. There's this new variant that you can't escape. And people are coming to the conclusion that there's nothing they can do. They're going to get it. And you're like ahead of us in this game in many ways.
Barely. You know, I know so many people now who have it. Our neighbors have it. Various former colleagues of ours have it. A lot of friends have it. It's like I was talking to a guy on our Mincing Rascals podcast the other day, Brandon Pope from WCIU. He said he knows 18 people who've been diagnosed positive with COVID now, and just in the last couple of days. So it's this Omicron variant seems highly contagious. It also doesn't seem to be quite as serious as previous variants. And those of us who are appropriately vaxxed are getting through it okay. I had very mild symptoms. I wouldn't have even, I took NyQuil, and if I hadn't known about COVID, I would never even taken a test. It just felt like a seasonal cold. My wife and daughter had it a little bit worse. I just talked to my son in New York City where this variant is running rampant, and he's got it, and he feels totally fine. It's his second time. He had it in February before the vaccines, and he had a much harder time with it back then, but now he's gotten it again. So it just seems like there's so many breakthrough cases. This variant seems so incredibly contagious. And so the smart thing for people to do is to get vaccinated, to try. I mean, yeah, you can try to keep yourself away from it, but and it makes sense. These things that we're doing, you know, with people wearing masks and so on, and that all makes sense. But it just seems inevitable to me that the way unless we're going to cocoon ourselves like we did in March and April of 2020, you're going to get this. And I guess the hope is that some people say that it'll sort of burn itself out because so many people will get it. But I don't see a way of really avoiding it. I worry about my elderly parents getting it. They're 90, you know, and they've so far avoided it. But I don't see how they can. It's just, it's everywhere. So, I mean, and yeah, you see what's going on in sports, right? I mean, on the day we're speaking, they had to cancel like every major sporting event, like a bunch of bowl games got canceled. There's nothing to do but talk to your family today.
Spread COVID to your family members. Hey, Merry Christmas. Have some COVID.
Yeah.
All right, let's talk a little bit about what I call the existential crisis. And I think this may be exaggerated in my head. So you can help me through this, Eric. You could play therapist to me. Like I said, I spent so much of 2020 and 2021 as well, but mainly 2020, so afraid of COVID. And whenever I think of COVID, I think of John Prine, who is one of my favorites from way back when, and he died. We did a whole special show about him, and it was just so sad that like COVID killed John Prine. And I just, that it's like, I think of like, it's death. It's almost like, oh my God, if I get COVID, that could be it. And yet I'm looking at you. You look fine. You sound fine. Nate, our producer, he has COVID. He's playing in pain. He's producing the show, the bonus episode. So just help me through this. Did you have the fear? Did you have like an existential moment of angst of like, this is it when you got it, that has dissipated over time? Or have you taken it in stride?
I took it in stride. Because, like I said, my symptoms were all that bad. You've had Mark Guarino on your show, but the Washington Post. He got COVID, and he thinks it was at the Smollett trial. He covered the Smollett trial and the Rittenhouse trial, for the Washington Post and maybe the New York Times. Mark's a friend of mine, and I think he's certainly an acquaintance of yours. And his symptoms were a lot worse. He was reporting that on social media. He's made it through fine, though, and he's totally on the mend. And so it's hitting everybody a little different. I don't know anybody who's been hospitalized. Now, you do. But I don't remember from your show whether the person you know who's hospitalized, one of your regular guests, was vaccinated or not. But most people I know who've gotten this and have been vaccinated are experiencing a variety of symptoms. It's all over the map as far as I can tell in terms of the kinds of things that people are feeling, but they're not. I mean, and some of them are incapacitated. Then there goes like the guy in the Bulls who said his only symptom was boredom, right?
So, yes, DeRozan.
DeRozan, right. When I first was diagnosed, I was like, well, you know, everything that I read gives me confidence that I'm going to get through this. A year ago, before the vaccines, I think I would have been completely freaked out because people are still dying, obviously, of this, but most of the people who are hospitalized, most of the people who are dying of this are unvaccinated. So, I mean, the obvious lesson here is that if you want to be on the safe side, get vaccinated.
And that was the conclusion of your column, get vaccinated. And so talk about that, because you say the obvious conclusion, and I agree with your conclusion, but the conclusion that many people in America draw from this is that what's the point? It doesn't matter. It's like you're going to get it anyway. In fact, there's almost a matter of glee in which non-vaccinated, particularly in the world of sports and football players, non-vaccinated football players, that's a whole other subsection of the non-vax, the anti-vax movement, the football players, trash-talking football players. They're like, oh, man, what's the point? XYZ, he's got it. This guy's got it. That guy's got it. So some people take a look at the fact that you got it or Nate got it or Mark Arino, by the way, who was the guest that we talked John Prine with. That's so funny you should mention him because we did the deep dive. The guy knows more about John Prine than pretty much anyone I know.
Mark Greeno hits to all fields as a journalist. He really does.
He does. He loves his music too. But anyway, so respond to that. Respond as best you can to the counter argument that if a guy like Eric Zorn got COVID, and if a guy like Nate, the producer, DJ Nate, got COVID, then what's the point of getting vaccinated?
Well, obviously the point is that it's not, no one ever promised you that the vaccine was going to prevent you from getting COVID, let alone this new strain of COVID. But the promise is, and the promise that has been fulfilled by science, is that it will reduce your symptoms, that will make it far less likely that you'll end up hospitalized on a ventilator or dead. This guy wore a seatbelt and he was still killed in a car accident. Well, yeah, people who wear seatbelts still get killed in car accidents. That happens. But that doesn't mean that wearing a seatbelt doesn't vastly reduce the chances that you're going to be killed in a car accident. So, I think of the vaccine as a seatbelt.
So, in general, we're going to go down this path then. We're at the anti-vaxxers. What do you make of the anti-vaxxers? I deal with this as an issue on my show all the time. And pretty much every question, every guest is asked this. And I don't have anti-vaxxers really on the show, Eric. I can't deal with the illogic of it all for me anyway. So, you know, they have plenty of outlets to go to. They don't need to go to my humble little podcast. But what do you make of anti-vaxxers and the tenacity with which they advance their cause?
Well, there are certainly people who distrust everything from big pharma and big government, which is arguably where the vaccine comes from. But we've had vaccines for decades, generations, centuries, and vaccines have a proven track record overall. I think what you hear from them is, well, we don't know what the long-term effects are going to be of this vaccine. And it's true, we don't know, but we have a pretty good idea that they're not going to be severe. There's no evidence so far that they cause in any statistically significant way long-term effects. But there are people who just distrust government. And there's also an extremely strong partisan element to this. And I wrote about this in my column the other day in my newsletter, which was that the Republicans and Democrats have vastly different experiences when it comes to COVID. And so just for instance, like I can just read you these statistics here, which is that Monmouth University took this poll and they found that they said, ask, have you received at least one dose of COVID vaccine? Republicans, yes, 54%, Democrats, 96%. And then they said, is it likely you'll never get the vaccine? 30% of Republicans said they'll never get the vaccine, 2% of Democrats. Are you personally concerned about catching new variants of COVID? Republicans 5%, Democrats 27%. And that may have some of the vaccine, the people who have the vaccine are less concerned about it. But then you also look at since May 2021, people living in counties that voted heavily for Trump are three times as likely to die from COVID-19 as those who live in areas that went for Biden. In October, the reddest tenth of the country saw death rates that were six times higher than the bluest tenth. I mean, there is this sense that a lot of Republicans have, which is that this is the Democrats and the liberals telling them to get vaccinated, so by God, they're not going to do it. I was really encouraged on Tuesday when President Biden came out and he kind of gave the previous administration some credit for Operation Warp Speed, for pushing this vaccine forward. I'm not sure that the Trump administration deserves a ton of credit for what a lot of foreign-based companies did with this, but let's say that they did put some emphasis on developing a vaccine and that was a good thing. And then Trump came back on Tuesday night, or on Sunday, Trump had said he'd gotten the booster. On Tuesday night, Trump was interviewed on Fox News, and he was very gracious about what Biden had said and said this was a very good thing. And he said that this was a way toward healing, and he was telling people that these vaccines work. And to me, that might send a message to MAGA, which is like, Donald Trump, your idol, the one you worship and will follow to the ends of the earth, he is telling you to get vaccinated and boosted, so do it. And I think that's going to change a significant number of minds and probably save a significant number of lives. It's all in service of Trump's ego. I don't necessarily give Trump a lot of credit for doing this for humanity or for humane reasons. It's all about feeding his own ego, but I don't care at this point. I want this goddamn pandemic over, and if it means we have to pat Trump on the head to do it, let's do it, because that's where we are here. There is definitely a partisan element to this.
Well, we talk about this on the show all the time, and Donald Trump, what a piece of work. But the notion that Donald Trump, follow me on the illogic of this all, Eric. Donald Trump wants credit for creating the vaccine. At the same time, he is unwilling to commit himself. I know he says things every now and then, but like the other day with Bill O'Reilly, when as soon as they started booing, he backs off. So he's unwilling to commit himself to promoting taking the vaccine on a consistent level. He doesn't want to challenge the notion. The central notion of MAGA is that this is a personal choice matter, that this is a matter of your liberty to control your body. And so if you want to take the vaccine, God bless you. But you should not be, nobody should be mandated to take the vaccine. So the illogic of it all is that Trump is patting himself on the back for, quote unquote, inventing the vaccine or creating the vaccine or whatever word he wants to use at the moment, while backing off from the hard work of actually implementing the vaccine the way it should be to save us from COVID. So in reality, he's not saving us from anything.
Yes, Ben. Well, I'm a glasses one quarter full kind of guy on this, which is about where it is, right? You're absolutely right what you say, but this is a ray of hope. This is a way into moving people who are politically stubborn about this, who think that this is, they're showing loyalty to Trump. And you've seen online and some TikTok videos of really crazed Trump people who are really mad at him now. They're saying, like, he wants us to take the vaccine, and the vaccine is poison, and it's causing COVID, and it's, the completely wild people, when they're done waiting for JFK Jr. to show up in Dealey Plaza, they're recording these TikTok videos. So you have a situation where you've got Trump who's maybe got a foot in the door here, and if his ego gets stroked enough by the national media, if his ego gets stroked enough by his own people in his own party, who know? The people, those Fox News hosts who are telling people not to get the vaccine, they know. They've all been vaccinated. Come on. It's insane. And if they make a turn on the dime and they say, well, okay, President Trump is telling us to do this, maybe we should do this, maybe this is good for the economy and good for the country and good for the party. How's it good for the Republicans that more of their people are dying off? These are Trump voters who are dying off more than Biden voters. I don't know why this is even how this is astute in any way, that you inflame these culture wars and your people end up dying in greater numbers. That doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, and I love the glass is quarter filled. Not even half filled. The glass is quarter filled. And it has a leak in it, Eric. I hear you. Listen, the inconsistency, the illogic, and the madness of it all. I just read an article about some host on Fox that was like the violent language toward Fauci, Dr. Fauci, which is another offshoot of this. Listen, Republican Party has made a proclamation that they believe in fundamental liberty. And that's like this principle that they supposedly cling to. Of course, they're hypocritical. Of course, they don't believe in liberty across the board. But this is their talking point. This is what drives them. And so in that regard, Eric, it's going to be very difficult. I hate to be the glass is not even an eighth filled. But it's just going to be very difficult and challenging, to put it mildly. Especially if Trump, to get him to turn around on this, Eric, especially since Trump is only half-heartedly doing it. You know what I mean? You're right. He wants to stroke his ego, but then he doesn't want to do any hard work on it. You know, he doesn't want to have anyone boo him. Remember when he had like his existential moment of crisis, his own, when they booed him?
I remember this. Also, if you remember back to 2020, when he refused to wear a mask in public. Which would have, I think, sent a really strong... I mean, the thing about masks is I know that they're not perfect by any means, and especially some of these bandanas that people wear are barely effective, but there was a symbolic value to wearing masks, which said to everyone you encounter that you were taking this pandemic seriously, that you were, that this is something that not to be taken lightly, is a serious disease, we don't want to get it, that wearing the face covering, the mask, was it had two levels of effect. One was the practical level and one was the symbolic level. And Trump would not indulge in the symbolism. He ended up getting COVID, and maybe in part because of that. But when you think about the number of lives that were lost by Trump refusing to take it seriously, by telling people it was going to go away, by not encouraging them to take some basic measures, I am certain he made this pandemic worse. There are dead bodies piled up all over that you could point to and say, if not for Donald Trump and his mishandling, bungling of the pandemic, especially early on, they would be alive today. And I mean, it's monstrous what he did. It's a huge stain on his legacy, his reputation. So if it means that we now have to say, well, but gosh, Donald, yeah, there may be a huge pile of dead bodies, but you did help encourage the pharmaceutical companies to develop vaccines. So good on you. I'm willing to do that right now. I'll wait for history. I'll wait for history to have its judgment on Trump and handling the pandemic. If we can please get it over with as quickly as possible, if we can all, be pulling on the oars in the same direction. I do think that if he were to get behind a vaccine, if he were to get behind a mandatory vaccine program, if he were to get behind some of these efforts like we're seeing in Cook County and Chicago now, where if you go to where you have to present IDs, vaccine cards and so on to get into places. I think if he were to really get behind those, and people like DeSantis in Florida were to get behind those things, everyone would say, hey, we don't really like this as a long-term thing, but short-term, we need to get this under control. And if you can get these rascally MAGA people to get behind that for a while, you could save lives and bring this to the kind of end that it's going to come to. I'm not sure that it's ever going to completely go away, right? We may be getting COVID booster shots for the rest of our lives, man. Yeah. But, I can live with that.
I can live with that. And we already have flu shots.
Right.
So I hear what you're saying. Now, I'm going to have to think about this. I'm going to have to go for a walk later today and think about what you said, and maybe I'll even get a column out of this. Is saving the country from COVID worth exonerating Donald Trump from his many sins in regards to COVID? That's a struggle, Eric.
It's worth mumbling into your hand about it for a couple of months. That's what I said. I mean, no, I think history is going to be brutal on Donald Trump in a number of ways, and his handling of the pandemic is just going to be one of them. I don't think, you know, no, I, we cannot, you and I could not, even if we wanted to, exonerate Trump from the way he handled the pandemic overall. Yeah. But if we just say, you know, good, Donald, go, yes, you're on our side, you're helping us get rid of this pandemic, and ignore his grotesque missteps early on, and his, you know, the failing of testing, and, you know, I mean, it would go on and on about that, right? I mean, you look back at the things that he said, and the things that were done and not done early in the pandemic, it's horrifying, and it violates every rule of public health. But we can stuff that into the memory hole temporarily while we fight this pandemic. I mean, it doesn't do a whole lot of good to rail at Trump for this now.
Yeah.
And so if we can say, like, oh, you know, good old Donald and his vaccine, let's take, and I they should rebrand it. They call it the Trump vaccine in all these red counties. Say, let's go get the Trump vaccine, get the Trump booster, you know? Yeah, I mean, why not? Yeah. I know you're throwing up in your mouth here a little bit, Ben. But,
no, I'm just thinking about, first of all, when we get to Eric Zorn's crystal ball, we'll get into how history will judge Donald Trump. I'm thinking the more, soon to come moments that somehow or other promoting Donald Trump as the savior of America from COVID would have consequences in the upcoming midterms. In general, this fits a larger pattern of lowering the bar so much when it comes to MAGA and Donald Trump. And avoiding and ignoring the historical realities so much when it comes to Donald Trump, that we just continually move the center of discourse in this country to the right, and we become more accepting of bad behavior. You know what I mean? It's like, so like Mitch McConnell, for instance, this is just what popped into my mind, says anything remotely critical of the insurgents who overtook the Capitol on January 6th, there's a tendency on the part of Americans to say, of good mind, oh my God, that's progress. That's progress. So Mitch McConnell criticized people who said they were trying to kill the vice president of the United States and overturn the will of the election, Eric. Do you follow what I'm saying? And then, of course, he's just doing it for strictly political reasons. It's a political tactic. And when it's no longer, you know, important for him and necessary to be critical, he backs off. Go ahead.
Well, let me address your worries about the 2022 election, congressional elections, particularly, which I share completely. The idea that we would give Trump some credit in a way to help get the pandemic under control. I think that the state of the pandemic is going to be a major factor. And if in October of 2022, we're still having, you know, flights canceled. The news today on Friday is that the airlines are canceling flights all over the country. You may be stuck out there in LA for a couple more weeks. And you know, I've got a son down in Florida. He may not be able to get home. You know, if that's the kind of thing we're seeing in October 2022, the Democrats are going to get completely slaughtered. If, on the other hand, the pandemic is back under control, which it is likely to be, given, you know, what happens in the summer months, and given that this Omicron variant is like a brush fire right now, but it may well burn itself out. We may be back to kind of normal, which is what we're hoping for. If that's the case, then the economy, which I think you know, some of these issues with inflation that we're seeing right now, of course, the supply chain issues, all those things are going to be, we have some time for those to come back in. And so if people are feeling good about the direction of the country, that's the Democrats' best chance. Whether or not we're stroking Donald Trump on the side, you know, or trying to say good dog, so he doesn't lunge at us is another thing. But I really think that getting this pandemic under control is going to be a key to whatever slim chances the Democrats have of holding on to Congress. Because once we lose control, once the Democrats lose control of Congress, then the January 6th commission goes away. Any chance we have of getting justice for what happened on January 6th goes away. And things for 2024 start to look pretty grim, because President Biden is not going to get jack shit done in 2023 and 2024. With at least one branch of Congress in Republican hands. He's not getting much done now.
No.
But
By the way, that was a great line, which I wrote down and we'll use. Maybe I'll give you credit. I don't know. I'll think about it at the time. Telling Donald Trump, good dog, so he doesn't lunge at us. That is a great line. Sometimes, like when my guests are riffing, they come up with really great lines. Not, I shouldn't make it seem like it's only occasionally. Miles Konflasik came up with the other day that was brilliant. And Delmarie Cobb was on a was having a field day the other day. But I get some great lines from my guests. When you guys are just like free-form riffing, like you're John Coltrane on the sax. All right, Eric, speaking of riffing, let's move away from COVID for a while. And folks, let me just tell you, for a guy who has COVID, he looks great. All right? You look marvelous, Eric.
Like to say that I recovered from COVID. I mean, I took tested positive last month, and I was outside of the 10-day window, which allowed Mary Schmeek and I to do our little Christmas show at the Old Town School. We were outside of the COVID protocols. We're like the Bulls, you know. We weren't several members of our cast had gone through it, but nobody at the time was testing positive or outside that window. So no, I feel perfectly fine right now.
All right. So you mentioned Mary, and so let's just get into life after the Tribune, the Chicago Tribune. You worked there for I don't know, 30 years. How many?
41.
God damn! Whoa.
Then you and I used to play basketball together in the 80s. Come on, we're older than we think, you know?
Yeah, you're right. So you worked there, life after the Tribune, you walked away. I give you a lot of credit for walking away. So what's your life like after the Tribune, after something 41 years of writing for the Tribune? What's life
it's,
like?
It's really wonderful, actually, to tell you the truth. I took a buyout from the Tribune, from Alden Global Capital, the hedge fund that buys newspapers and strips them down to the skeletal parts. And Mary Schmeek took the buyout. Steve Chapman took a buyout. Let's see, what other columnists? Darlene Glanton took a buyout. And Heidi Stevens took a buyout, but she continues to contribute to the Tribune. And so, you know, we have a financial cushion to get us to sort of retirement age, whatever. And I started writing on Substack, and I've just been having a blast doing it. I do a weekly newsletter. I call it the Picayune Sentinel. It's named after a little mimeographed publication that my late grandfather used to put out to communicate with his mathematics colleagues around the country. And so I borrowed the title of his publication, and also the slogan, "Beautiful Thoughts, Beautifully Expressed," and that's been going really well. I get about 20,000 plus page views per issue on it, and that's more page views than I usually got from my Tribune columns. Now the Tribune columns, of course, had a lot of ink on paper readers as well, so the reach is not. The same, obviously, but it's really, but the thing is that I write on my own schedule and I choose my topics, and I don't have people telling me, don't write about that, or you've already written about that. I just, you know, or anyway, so it's been really fun to do that. And that's sort of become a part-time job. And my wife, Johanna, who you know, is sort of in, she left her job a couple years ago, and she's doing a lot of freelance audio editing and consulting. She works really part-time for Audible, the audiobook company. So, you know, we got money coming in and I'm at home. And so life after the Tribune has been pretty great.
And so I never knew this. You kept that close to your vest, that you had to deal with that meddlesome editors. So it's
the editors that I had at the Tribune were really good. My immediate supervisors were really good. Toward the end of my career, I was, my boss was Kristen McQuarrie, who, you know, a lot of people think has turned into some sort of demon. Kristen McQuarrie, despite what, you know, you may disagree with her politically, she's really a wonderful person, a wonderful editor, was a wonderful supervisor, very supportive, never gave me any grief about what I wanted to write, let me spew my lefty poison. My editors were really good. Occasionally they would say, like, you know, don't write, you've already written about that, don't write about it again, and things like that. But no, for the most part, they were really great. But it's more like not having three deadlines a week and having to come up with a column and file it by a certain time, having that pressure off me and being able to. And the other thing about a column, and you write a column, so you know, it's like a column has to be a certain length, right? So you got to figure out not only what is it you want to say, but how's it going to fit into the box. And for me now, I just write what I want to write. And I wrote a whole long thing about Dan Webb's report on Kim Fox and quoted it at great length this week. And I wasn't counting words and going, well, that's not 700 words. That's, 1,200 words, whatever. So being able to have that kind of thing. And that wasn't, like I said, my editors at the Tribune were pretty great. So I don't have any issue with that. But, I was very worried about what the future was going to hold. One of the things that I did before I decided to leave was I looked at what Alden Global Capital newspapers around the country did when it came to opinion writing. And I saw that for the most part, they got rid of local news columnists and they just had people like David Grising, for instance, who's for the BGA and has a column in the Tribune. Those are not staff columns. Dave Grising is, I'm not saying anything bad about him. He's a good writer. He's a former Tribune columnist, actually. But what they like to do is they hire people for a pittance who are working for other companies, and so they have think tanks and people and volunteer op-eds. They don't have a lot of staff columnists. So I thought my days here are numbered either way. So I'm taking a buyout, go and see what else while I still have some gas in the tank, to see what else the world of opinion writing might have to offer. So
yeah, no, I think it was a good decision on your part. And I did a column after all the columnists left, saying, will I continue my subscription to the Tribune? I got a lot of issues with the Tribune, Eric, which I won't burden you with at this moment because I want to go on to move on to the Dan Webb, Kim Fox thing. But I struggle. Should I cancel the Tribune? And I just think it's lethargy. the Tribune just keeps re-upping because it's on a credit card. So, what'll probably happen, Eric, is that if I lose my credit card, which has been known to happen in my life, and I have to cancel it, then that moment will come. Because you know what I mean? They block the credit card. The Tribune starts sending you these emails. I don't know if you've ever been in this position, because you probably always got it for free. But
No, not at all. In fact, not at all. We the staff pays for their own subscriptions.
Man, that is the cheapest thing. Just me add that to the list of things that annoy the hell out of me about that is cheap, Tribune.
I am not with the Tribune anymore, but I do think that you have great journalists there. Stacey St. Clair, who was part of the team, and Christy Gutowski, who covered the Rittenhouse trial. They did a great job. You have Greg Pratt on your show from time to time. Greg is doing a bulldog job down at City Hall. I feel like there are some great writers, great journalists there, who are continuing to do great work under difficult circumstances, and I'm supporting them.
I'm not talking about them. To quote Richard Nixon, let me make this perfectly clear. I'm talking about the cheap asses who run the Tribune that charge their writers to subscribe to Tribune. That is cheap, Eric. That's all I got to say. My mother, may she rest in peace. Her big thing was when people were cheap, she would call them out on it. So that's the cheapest thing I've ever heard.
I think we did get an employee discount there for a while.
Nice of you, Colonel McCormick. Goddamn.
No, and if you went into the office, they did have newspapers there for you to read. So,
I know. By the way, I don't even think Logan Roy charges his employees for the newspapers. That's a Succession reference, ladies and gentlemen. I'm only 3 years behind in Succession.
I haven't started it yet. Are you recommending it?
Are you kidding? Well, okay. Let me, a typical Ben Jarofsky recommendation. I always back off, okay, from my recommendations, because if you recommend something to somebody, go, I didn't like it. So I tailor my recommendations. So if you like dramas where there's these intense confrontations that the creators allow to go on for a while, I'm talking like 20 minutes, Eric, if you like that, where people are arguing with each other and there's tension building, then it's for you. But if you want action, if you want guys running down alleys, if you want guys jumping in roofs, hopping into cars, shooting guns, if you want steamy romance, it's not for you. There's no steamy romance. There's no guys running down alleys. It's just intense conversation between fabulously wealthy people who are all equipped with great cutting remarks, the ability to make really quick, witty remarks, and they're wheeling and dealing. So I don't know.
So how far are you into it? You're just in the first season?
I finished there's three seasons. I finished the first season and I'm almost done with the second. And my wife and I were just plowing. I mean, every night we come home to our little, you got to see this thing. It's like this little room we have and we watch an episode. So yeah, I'm into it. In fact, I'm going to do Ramana Hussein. I'm going to plug this. She's now started to watch it. So we're going to take the deep dive on a Friday with Ramana on Succession because she's now got her watching it. So yeah, look, if you're liking tense dramas with a lot of great crackling dialogue, it's for you.
Yeah, I got to try it. Everyone's talking about it, and that's one of the things that gets me to watch things is when I feel like it's sort of part of the zeitgeist. And Succession kind of washed over me for a couple of years, and now I realize that everyone as anyone seems to be watching it. And so that would include you and Pam, I guess.
Yeah. All right. So let's move on to Dan Webb, Kim Fox, and give folks sort of like the nickel version of your take on this. As you said, you wrote a long essay on this. Go ahead.
Well, the Webb report, which he wrote back in August before the election and was put under seal until last Monday, describes the kind of chaos and misinformation and dishonesty that was coming out of Fox's office over this fundamentally minor, stupid thing that Jussie Smollett did. And you look at it and you think, like, what? I still don't know the answer. I thought that this report would clear up what was Kim Fox thinking? What was Joe Maggots thinking? What were these guys doing when they acted to indict Smollett? And then, was it 19 days later, they decide to, in a sort of hastily called, somewhat almost secretive act, drop all charges and allow him to go down to the lobby of the Layton courthouse and talk about how innocent he was, which really galled everybody that I knew. It was like, hey, come on, you know, look, we don't necessarily want to see you locked up in prison for this, but at least say you're sorry and pay a fine and move on. And so the whole question is what was going on, and the number of things that Fox said that were contradictory and wrong and dishonest were just kind of startling. And you read this 59-page report and you think, like, this was bad. And again, it's a small case, but I think it's symbolic to a lot of people of her lack of honesty, her lack of transparency, her failure to communicate well with people. And you need to have someone in an important job like Cook County State's Attorney, you have to have real confidence in someone like that, because she is at the tip of the spear when it comes to some of these wild problems we're having with crime these days. So it's a bigger thing than just this stupid hoax that Jussie Smollett orchestrated. So anyway, I thought it was I think that there needs to be another turn of the wheel here. She needs to come around and really talk about something that she's refused to talk about so far, which is like, what were these conversations like? She says, according to this report, that she was taken aback when they dropped these charges. Well, what were those conversations like? Why did she decide after this was done? Why didn't, if she was taken aback and she thought it was the wrong decision, why didn't she just take over and say, no, this is not the right thing to do? But instead, she doubles down on this idea that this was a normal, routine way of handling things, which it was not. And then she writes an op-ed in the Tribune saying that, well, there were problems with the case that had developed, which had not happened, according to everybody now. So it's just like on and on with this. It is, as I said, it's a cluster event.
It is. I've said from the get-go, she was blinded by celebrity. Celebrity is a very powerful thing in our country. Everybody wants to be cool. Everybody wants to be on the A-team, you know. Not everybody could be Eric Zorn riding around in that cool Mercedes-Benz of his. I just made that up. I don't even know what he drives.
I drive a Honda CRV, but it's very, very similar.
It is mine. He's Steve McQueen, okay? And I'm not talking about the British director. I'm talking about the action figure from the 60s and 70s. So that, to me, Eric, is I've always felt she was blinded by celebrity, and there were overtures made to her from powerful people in the Democratic Party and Hollywood celebrity. And it's not even like superstar celebrity. It's not even like Jay-Z celebrity. You know what I mean? Or on that level, you get what I'm saying? It's not Bradley Cooper celebrity.
I do get what you're saying. I honestly had not heard of Jussie Smollett before this whole thing happened. Now, because I wasn't an Empire watcher, so.
Well, Tina Chen called. I mean, just look at the.
Yeah, no. Yeah, you're right.
You know, Tina Chen called. Tina Chen for folk. I mean, anybody who listens to my show knows, because I talk about this obsessively. Tina Chen, big time Democratic chieftain, and friends of Michelle Obama. So that's part of the celebrity. And so who knows? Have we seen? I can't remember, Eric. Your memory has to be better than mine. Have we seen like a list of all the people who called? Have they ever chronicled the list of people, all the people who called on behalf of Jussie Smollett? Or
I didn't see. I read the entire report from Dan Webb. I didn't see that sort of list. She was in touch much more than she admitted at the time with Journey Smollett, who is Jussie's sister, and she said that she cut off conversations with her as soon as it became clear that Jussie was a suspect in the case. But that turned out to be completely wrong. She kept communicating with her many, many days after about the case. So I don't know that there were, you know, I don't think Michelle Obama called. I don't think we know that. But that, you know, whether she was blinded by a celebrity or whether she saw in this case, my theory of this case has always been that she saw in this case a perfect way to illustrate to the people of Cook County that her priority is not on this piddly shit crime, like staging a hate crime, and that she is focused on violent crime, serious crime, crime that actually threatens people, and that she's not going to prioritize things like this. And this was a great way of symbolizing that, she felt, to people. Just like, you know, her attitude toward property crime is basically like, we're not going to lock people up for that. We're going to set a fairly high threshold even for prosecuting people for property crime, shoplifting, and so on. So she saw in this like an opportunity, or her office saw in this an opportunity to really illustrate that by saying, look, we're not even going to bother with this stupid case. Like, go and sin no more. We're not going to get, you know, just get out of here. And it backfired enormously, because she didn't have her finger to the wind. Her office didn't have its finger to the wind about how the public felt about this, which was that Smollett had, I mean, I know that it's not a city with nearly 800 murders in it to have someone say, well, there's a MAGA person in the country who committed a hate crime, doesn't really put that much of a stain on the city of Chicago, right? I mean, we've got other stains on us that are much larger than that. But that he felt like, people felt like, you know, he phonied up this crime. He led the police on a $100,000 goose chase. And, you know, we at least need to get a confession from him and an apology from him. And then, you know, this all should have been over him in June of 2019. But the fact that it lingered on and on tells you that the public didn't buy this. They thought, we want our chief law enforcement officer to take this kind of thing seriously enough, at least to get the kind of thing that you always would get. You look at at similar cases, and I found a couple, and our reporters found others, of people who filed false police reports for various reasons. You know, trying to the one was a couple on Lower Wacker Drive. Remember this one where they claimed that they were accosted by three black men who took all their things, and it turned out to be a complete lie. And you know, and they got community service, which is, you know, a fine community service. You know, we do have bigger problems than faked hate crimes, but we do also want our law enforcement officers to at least get a confession, a guilty plea, and move on. And it was just a huge miscalculation. She apparently doesn't have people around who her, you know, her wait a second person who says, come on, you know.
Oh, that's Madam in Chicago. That is a Chicago thing. Yeah, we could do a whole show on that point. The lack of wait a second, people. That's a good line.
That's another good line. No. You absolutely need people like that in your office, and I think that Mayor Lightfoot lacks a wait a second person. I think Rahm Emanuel lacked a wait a second person. I think, I mean, you look back, who they all seem.
Mayor Daley, we went 20 odd years without a wait a second. Every dumb idea that Mayor Daley came up with, I never have seen evidence. Just think the parking meters. I'll give a shout out to my dear friend Mick Dumpke. He was the one who did the FOIA for me. We tag teamed on that. We looked to see, Eric, what evidence there existed in the city hall that any thought was given to Mayor Daley's idea of selling the parking meters. Okay, it was ultimately Mayor Daley was advocating. None. It was like we did a FOIA and they turned over. It was just like this promotional brochure that the promoter of selling the park. So That's a great line.
Yeah, but that's what they needed someone to say, like, well, going back to the parking meter deal, it dug the city out of a budget hole in the moment. Right. I mean, I forget what it was. Was it 1.2 billion? What was it? I mean, it seemed like 1 billion. And it seemed like a lot of money at the time, and it covered over a lot of problems in the moment, but nobody said, like, you know, Your Honor, we're selling this for, is it 99 years or 75 years? I can't remember how long they sold it for.
Well, you're mixing it up. Dyslexia on a part of Eric Zorn, because there's the 75-year Skyway and the 99-year parking meter. But you know what, Eric? Having said that, I could have had him reverse myself. So, and usually if we were doing a show live, there'd be a dear friend, Frank, there's a listener who checks us and then comes right back with the correct answer. So we're not doing this live. So it's one or the other, 99 or 75. I just can't remember at the moment.
But somebody say, like, let's just do a little analysis of how much money we could, if we were to take this operation over ourselves, how much money we're losing long term here. But apparently nobody around you did the deep reporting.
Nobody. The only guy who did it was Alderman Scott Wagsbeck. Shout out Scotty Wagsbeck, 32nd Ward. And they all yelled at him. And they treated him like an outcast. And Richard Mellon said, they're going to kill you. Don't do this. It's like, what a dumb city. That's a great line, though. I wrote it down. Wait a second, people. They don't exist in the city of Chicago when it comes to the powerful. And by the way, we'll move on from Smollett. But when you were going on your riff, I thought, you know who she, Kim Fox, you could argue the greatest disservice to was Jesse Smollett, because he started proclaiming his innocence because she bungled the case, and he felt compelled to continue to proclaim his innocence, even though nobody believes him in America. You know what I'm saying? No one believes him. He's still going around proclaiming his innocence. It's like he painted himself into a corner, Eric, and he can't get out. And
his career is in shambles. He said so on the witness stand, which may have been one of the few true things that he said on the witness stand. There's a question I've asked my readers to predict what's going to happen with his sentencing, and the smart money was that he's going to get probation. I think that it's now quite possible that the judge, having been listened to him spew his falsehoods from the witness stand, he's not technically convicted of perjury, but he perjured himself on the witness stand, if you believe the jury's verdict. And I think that may call for a short, salutary prison sentence to let people know that you can't just get on the stand and lie. You can't double down on your lies without getting a little bit more punishment. The original offense, faking a hate crime, probation, a fine.
I hope he doesn't get it. Well, whatever. Well, I really hope they don't give him a prison, because I think ultimately sticking to your fabricated story is not worthy, particularly when the story is of such low stakes, throwing a guy in jail.
I tend to agree with that, but the idea that he got on the stand and lied has turned me into someone who would hope for maybe a 6-month sentence or something to really underscore that you don't do. If you can sit there quietly while your lawyers argue for your innocence, but if you get on the stand, you raise your right hand, swear to tell the truth, and you keep lying, at some point you got to say, we can't just countenance that. We can't say just, okay, bad boy. On the other hand, the other argument is this guy really has suffered enough in that he has had to, he's lost a career. I think he was a fairly rising star. He's 39 years old. I don't know that he's going to be able to turn it around. There are second acts in American life.
Oh, come on. You
think of,
yeah.
You think of,
oh,
like, was God. He Hugh Grant, right? I mean, Hugh Grant caught with a hooker in a car in LA. And the public will forgive people who ask for forgiveness, but Smollett has not asked for forgiveness, and so I don't think he's going to get.
He's going to have that moment. He's going to. But anyway, the one I always think of is Marv Albert. Going back.
Oh,
sports.
Yeah, yeah. Or Pee Wee Herman, right? I mean, he recovered a little bit.
I still have my T-shirt that says "Leave Pee Wee Alone," and I'm a huge fan of Pee Wee Herman. Always thought he got a bum deal. All right, you've already started with the closeout segment, Eric Zorn's crystal ball. So I'll just throw a few predictions at you again. So this is airing the day after Christmas, and it's usually the first week that people listen to a podcast.
The Boxing Day special.
Yes, boxing day. Very good. All right. So I'm going to give you the same, some of the same ones I gave Del Marie and get your thoughts. So you already talked briefly about this. Congressional midterms, as you view things right now, do you think the Democrats will hold on to the House of Representatives, or do you think the Republicans will take the House of Representatives in the midterm elections? Go.
I think the Republicans will take the House, unfortunately.
Wow. The glass has nothing in it. Okay.
Right. No, I mean, it's horrifying, but do you think that I'm not asking what you want. Obviously I would hope that it doesn't happen, but I don't, right now, the way the country is gerrymandered up for Republicans, I don't think that.
Well, I'm going to take something that you said and sort of, use it again here. You essentially were running down the variables that are still out there. You know, the unknown factors, and one of them is what you just said, gerrymandering, which would be one of, if not a top of the list. So how you design the districts, and there's a bunch of geeks out there who keep track of gerrymandered districts. So like, and then they do a final analysis of like how many districts are now just unbeatably Republican and how many are unbeatably Democrat. And I don't believe that final analysis has been done. You know, California just did its redistricting. So I just say there's too many variables out there for me to make an ironclad prediction, but I do sense the gloom and doom. All right.
Ben, I want to say you and I are on the exact same page about gerrymandering in Illinois, which is that I'm fine if they got rid of gerrymandering in Illinois, as long as Republicans in, say, North Carolina, Wisconsin, everywhere else agreed to it. I think unilaterally disarming because it's the right thing to do is just politically suicidal. And I have been, a lot of my good government friends, I am in strong disagreement with them saying that we should have neutral maps in Illinois. I say, yeah, if the rest of the country does it, I'm totally fine. It's ideal. I don't want politicians drawing their own maps, but until other states do it, no way should Illinois disarm you.
Absolutely.
Anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. It's ridiculous. If you just, good government people, just go look at the Texas map. You don't live in a vacuum. It's not like there's a country outside of Illinois, good government people. It's called the United States of America. Go look at the Texas map. And it's such a joke.
Absolutely. Yeah. I hear you talk about that, I drop what I'm doing and I stand up and cheer. So.
All right. J.B. Pritzker. Will J.B. Pritzker be reelected?
Arizona. Yes, of course. Of course he will be.
Well, you got the billionaire Kenny G promising to spend up to $300 million to defeat him.
On who? Rabine?
Kenny G doesn't even know how to pronounce his name. Is it Rabine or Rabine?
No, not, you know what? Right now, I don't see any plausible. The only Republican who I think could really ideologically give Pritzker a run for his money is Kinzinger. And I don't see Kinzinger getting through a primary with all these crazy Republicans. So I think you're going to run someone like Darren Bailey, who may squeak through. I mean, he's my prediction for the Republican nominee, if that's one of your questions.
Yeah, we've been
I think he's going to win with a plurality of the primary vote. I think the primary field's going to get crowded. But Illinois Republicans, we act like they're this wonderful, calm, serene, moderate group. Illinois Republicans are like Republicans everywhere. The fact is that the only kind of Republican who can get elected in Illinois right now is like Jim Edgar type or a Jim Thompson type or even a social moderate like Rauner was able to thread the needle and get in. But the Republican Party has moved way to the right. So it's going to be someone I think Darren Bailey is the one who's going to win that primary with like 32% of the vote, something like that.
All right, and final crystal ball. And folks, I'm going to do a little, give you a preamble on this one. Eric Zorn has wrote for the Tribune for 41 years. He's lived in the city of Chicago for almost all that time. So he's pretty much a Chicagoan. But what you don't know is that his roots are in the state of Michigan. He's a Wolverine, ladies and gentlemen. He grew up in Ann Arbor, ladies and gentlemen. He went to the University of Michigan. And behind him, as he speaks, is a University of Michigan banner. That's how much he loves. I wear Bulls hats. He has University of Michigan banners on his wall. And you may not know this, listeners of the Ben Jarosky Show, because you're mostly political geeks, but the University of Michigan will be contending for the college football championship. It's one of the four teams that will be battling off for the college football championship. And the coach of the University of Michigan is none other than Jim Harbaugh. He used to play quarterback for the Chicago Bears. Yes, you learn things on my show. So, Eric Zorn, will your beloved Wolverines of Michigan be national champions in the next couple of weeks?
Go. You know, I hate to be the guy who turns against his team and predicts with his head, not his heart. But I watched Alabama dismantle Georgia. And Michigan is a good team. I don't think they're going to win. I think Alabama's going to win the title. I think Michigan might well beat Georgia, but I don't think they're going to have – I don't think they can beat Alabama. I hate to say it because I would, you know, I'll be obviously a leather lungs for Michigan. But if I want to increase my accuracy percentage, I'm going to go with Alabama. What about you?
Well, first of all, I long ago learned that it really doesn't matter what any of us predict. The world goes on without us. Okay. So, and nobody is keeping track. By the way, you know, except for maybe me. You know, so I'm a Big Ten guy. I love the Big Ten. I'm a Northwestern fan because I grew up in Evanston. So, God, talk about hopeless causes. So,
yeah, how's that working out for you?
Working out. So, my dear friend Mick Dumke and I are the two Northwestern fans. So, I'm predicting Michigan. They're going all the way. Big Ten is going to win its first championship. I think Ohio State won one about, I don't know, I forget. I lose track of time, Eric. Definitely within the last 10 years, Ohio State won one. So, I'm going Michigan. And Jim Harbaugh will then quit and become coach of the Chicago Bears. So there you go. One.
That's quite a prediction. I guess my question is not Nagy is going to go for sure. The question is Ryan Pace going to go? Are they going to get rid of a sort of clean house all the top of that? Bears?
The Bears. Man, I've been following the Bears since 1966, Eric. And you know what I laughed? I got to just say this. I'm not naming names, but some guy who doesn't write about sports predicted that Nagy would be fired before the season was over. I'm like, this is why you don't let political writers write about sports. Because anybody who knows anything about the Chicago Bears knows that they're even cheaper than the aforementioned Tribune. Tribune charged its reporters. Boy, Eric, you should never have told me that. I am not going to let that one go. That is the cheapest cheap of all cheap. Tribune, and that is so cheap. Charging reporters, good God! And the Bears are notoriously cheap too. So Eric, you knew the Bears weren't going to fire a coach.
They never have in the middle of the season, right? Every other franchise in the country knows just to cut ties and find somebody new and get going. And send a message, but the Bears going to – well, and of course, the truth is, why would you bother at this point, right? I mean, they're totally out of the playoff picture. I mean, that game Monday night was just a nightmare.
All right, so here's a question for Eric Zorn. You're going to watch some ducking and dodging, ladies and gentlemen. Let's watch this. Eric Zorn, in your humble opinion, who is cheaper, the Tribune or the Chicago Bears? Go.
right now, I bet it's the Tribune. Historically, they were pretty good to me in terms of, you know.
No, historically, it's just that's just like a little quirky thing. They charge their reporters. But then they go, but if you come into the office, we'll give you a newspaper. Then we have to deduct the cost of getting to the office from the newspaper. All right, Eric, it's been a blast. And you show no signs whatsoever of any COVID. I know you said you're over it already, but so it's given me hope.
I want to give you one last lesson about Alexi Giannoulias. Pronounce his last name. I want to stress this, that when you think, and this is your mnemonic for this, when you think of Alexi, think of him holding a martini with gin in it. So you think like Alexi, you know, he's got a little bit of a James Bond look to him. Giannoulias. That's how you say his name, okay? And you can all tell right, Dennis, too. Dennis butchers the name just like you do. So I really don't want to hear Giannoulias from you guys anymore.
All right. So since you brought that up, on behalf of Dennis, we're going to close with you doing your Alexi, your imitation of Alexi imitating Barack Obama. Go ahead, Eric.
This is your impression of Alexi. You do a great one. I can't You guys both do a better Janulius impression than I do.
No, but it's yes, he's imitating Obama. He's channeling Obama so much.
Yeah. No, I know. Yeah, I know. Your impression of that is it's very funny. It's very funny, Ben, when you do that. Yes. There you go.
There you go. That's Eric Sarner, ladies and gentlemen.
Janulius. And I'll predict he's Janulius. And he's going to win, by the way. That's my another prediction. So.
All right. He will win the Democratic primary and the general election, correct?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes, very good. All right, Eric Zorn, thank you very much. Outstanding job as always. And go take some rest because COVID can really wear you down. And you gave me a little hope, Eric. I totally anticipate that you're correct, that everybody will get COVID. And I'll probably catch it at the airport or on the airplane coming home.
If there's ever a flight back, yeah.
Yes, if there's ever a flight back. All right. Thank you very much, Eric. Merry Christmas to you and your family. Happy New Year, et cetera, and so forth. And thank you so much for being on the show. That's Eric Zorn. I'm Ben Jarofsky. Take care, everybody.